ready.
Man, this whole society got our women looking at themselves crazy, man. Can you imagine if a dude was walking around telling him he didn't want to wear a pair of khakis because it made his dick look big, man?
For real talk.
You ain't ready for the relationship your grandmother and granddaddy had. You ready to leave your dude if he don't text you back fast enough.
All the time.
And see, that's what's so crazy to me, right? Because you can be against police brutality and not want cops to die. Two ideas ain't mutually exclusive.
Welcome to the Span Report with your host, Mr. Span.
Sweden this evening, Stockholm this summer, champagne with pretty models that pose while they slumber. You have to see to believe it. Eiffel my tower, a long way from that Waffle House game, planning for hours. Now it's breakfast in bed, too high up to be scared. No key card, you a fraud, ain't no taking the stairs. Complimentary, the emphasis on compliments. I really didn't need this sweep, but the view beneath is ambient. Honestly, I'm really at a loss for words. 300 block to see and have the world. From the slum and stuff conditioned to living in the burbs. Niggas claim they're selling out, but that sounds so absurd. Cause wasn't we youngest watching the cars pass by? Like that's mine. Visit my father's friends on Christmas like they rich and we not. They had a pyramid of presents and stacked them up to the top. Get back home like damn, Zach, I think this all that we got. No disrespect to my pops, when Dixie just wasn't paying. My mama did what she could. As a kid, I heard patience was a virtue. But the first day of school, those last year's shoes could hurt you. Stains on those Paco jeans, but long on tie commercials. So they talk and they laugh. I swear I get back. Now them double R's is hard. And my G-Star, they got slack and we grown. Now those dead stock J's, I had them flown. Didn't even put them on. Ain't nothing set in stone on Egyptian cotton.
Life can be smooth. Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Span Report Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Span. This is episode number 156 of the report. And right now we're rocking out to some big crit, man. Egyptian cotton, rock with your boy.
I can't seem to lose on Egyptian cotton. Falling to the grooves of Egyptian cotton. It's getting harder not to sleep in when every day is the first day of a well-deserved weekend. I halt the sun in my blind so it won't peek in. Then roll over on the damsel down for freaking. Room service replenishing and she needed. She opened the door and she better decent. Ass out, I dig her like who gon' stop us now. I might not see her again, let's go another round. That's how it is.
Yes, indeed, man. It is Easter weekend, the start of Easter weekend for a lot of folks, man. I know some of y'all ain't get that Good Friday off, man. It's unfortunate. Your man Span got it, though. Your man Span got it. But we chilling out, man. We got this extended weekend, man, and we got some stuff to talk about. So we're going to do that exactly as we do here at the Span Report Podcast, man, real talk. But, yeah, man, I felt like kind of easing into this, man. It's real smooth. I like this shit right here, man, real talk. But, yeah, man, we getting to the end of the week, pretty much. The end of the week. And so there's some things that have kind of happened over the course of the week that I want to speak to and give voice to and whatnot. But before I do any of that, I got to let you guys know, of course, how to get in touch with me here at the Span Report Podcast and let your voice be heard, man. Go ahead and hit me up at the hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave me those voicemail messages. I'll play them on the show and respond in kind. You can also hit me up at feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com for your emails, man. So if you want to chop it up with me on the emails, go ahead, do that. I'll read those emails here live on the show and respond to them here as well. Also, for all of you who want to follow me on social media, man, chop it up with your boy on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms is Mr_Span. So go ahead, follow me there. Also, iTunes reviews, man, and Stitcher reviews really help the boy out. Really help your mans out, real talk. So go ahead, man, go to iTunes and or Stitcher Radio. Leave a 5-star review. Those 5-star reviews get read here on the show, and it's a way to put on, man. It's a way to let people know that you're rocking with us here at the Span Report, man, real talk. Also, for all of your Span Report needs, man, go to www.thespanreport.com. Go there, watch this podcast later on. If you're not here to watch it with us here tonight with Jack and Charlotte, I see y'all up there, man. Appreciate y'all watching in tonight. Also, you can vote in the polls, man. You can donate to the show. You can leave comments on the episodes. You can watch the videos that I use while I'm doing the show. Everything is available at thespanreport.com. You can probably cop yourself a t-shirt as well, man, at thespanreport.com. Man. So go ahead to thespanreport.com for all of your Span Report needs, man. Real talk. Now, of course, like I said, man, there's been a few things that have been going on in the week I kind of wanted to speak to. And one of those things that has been going on, man, like we got, well, shit, not just one, but a few things. We got TGT getting into some beef, man. We got Donald Trump out here dropping bombs like Hiroshima. We got Tommy Lauren out here crying and shit. We got, unfortunately, we lost Charlie Murphy, man. Charlie Murphy passed yesterday, so we're going to speak a little bit about that. And we got some other stuff, man. I got some more What in Blue Blazers. We got a few things to get into tonight here at the Span Report, man. Real talk. But of course, like the first thing I kind of wanted to get into, kind of start this thing off light, you know, kind of start this off light, man, is the TGT shit, man. Now, I am an R&B cat, man. Like, by and large, man, although I will dabble into the hip hop, man, I like hip hop. I grew up on hip hop. But by and large, man, I grew up listening to the blues and R&B. Like, real talk, that's kind of like how I came up. And so, like, I am a fan of the genre. It's a genre that is kind of like fading away a little bit. And it's funny to like see, you know, like with a lot of R&B music, man, they feel like they have to have like a rapper on there, or one of the R&B singers feels like they have to rap during the song some sort of way, or they'll have like these club bangers. Very few ballads coming out, man, you know, nowadays, man. And so, like, it was interesting to see three of the more recent top R&B singers come together and form a super group in Tyrese, Tank, and Genuine with TGT and having that be a thing, right? Now, they released their one album, man, Three Kings. I think it was like maybe 2 or 3 years ago. It might have been 3 years ago when that album came out. And it was a decent album. There were some questionable tracks on there, man. It was a couple things, and I was like, I don't know about this. But it was a decent album. But a lot of folks liked it. A lot of folks were drawn to it and whatever else, man. So, I mean, they got their core set of fans. Excuse me. Every last one of those dudes have their core set of fans. People who will go out and get every last one of their projects despite, you know, whatever beefs they may have amongst each other, right? So, according to Tyrese, the reason that there isn't a new TGT project being coming out is because he believes that Genuine is asking for too much money. He's a little... he's actually surprised that Genuine is asking for an equal split. God damn it, Span. I gotta time that better. Let's try that again. Okay, so the interesting thing about this is that Genuine wants an equal split. He wants them to split it three ways, man. And Tyrese feels like, yo, he's the bigger name. He should get the lion's share of the earnings for the group TGT, right? As a matter of fact, what happened was... Tyrese went on the Breakfast Club earlier this week, and he spoke about, they asked him about a new TGT project, and he spoke about this on the Breakfast Club earlier this week. Let me pull this up so you guys can watch here along with me. So let's do that there. And here we go. Let's pull up this video here.
Stuff I was working on. We had a moment.
Yeah, man.
Chris has always kept it real with me. So
now TGT, I seen Tank put on April Fool's Day that they were releasing some music.
Whoa, I didn't
and
know
I
that.
Came back and said, nah. So is there gonna be another TGT album? Or is that a rap?
I mean, listen, man. Genuine still wants an equal split.
Light skin, give light skin an equal split, man.
Look, you talk about keeping it real. He keeping it real in here, for you.
Give light skin an equal split, man.
How much you want to give Genuine, Tyrese?
Listen, Tank.
Let's settle this right here, right now. I know it needs to let's happen. Get it. Let's get it done.
I want to make this short and sweet. At the end of the day, you know, I feel like we're all brothers, we all family and all the above. But at the end of the day, man, you know, if Chris, as an example, is getting $200,000 a show and I'm getting $30,000 a show, I think my motivation to split equal with Chris would be pretty obvious. Because if I'm able to split with Chris, then I'm getting way more at the end of the day per show.
Right.
So it's not like at the end of the day, a lot of us can get caught up in ego and how, you know, how these it all feels. All of these conversations about the reality of business is uncomfortable, but it's business. Right. Outside of brotherhood and family, you my dude, I was at your wedding.
Ice King got the biggest record, though.
Whatever, man.
Hey, you gonna be shocked. You gonna be
real talk, he kind of do. Like, that's the interesting thing about this whole beef with the three of them is that, like, Ginuwine wasn't exactly, like bringing up the rear when it came to not only being legitimate in the game, but, like, yo, he was pulling numbers at a certain point in time in his career, too. Like, I don't really know who's all looking for Tyrese when it comes to R&B music anymore. Like, we know Tyrese for the movies. We know him for... the Terminator movie. I'm not the Terminator movie. The Transformers movies and the Fast and the Furious movies now, but that doesn't necessarily translate to you earning or needing to garner more money or get the lion's share of the earnings of the group. When by and large the group is together and they're fans for all three of these cats. So it was kind of interesting for him to kind of put it out there. He got a little salty when what's my man name? Envy said that.
He shocked when Ginuwine get a role in the next Fast and Furious.
And his check, he gonna get that check.
Will be even then.
No, but listen, for the fans, for the record, I believe we are gonna be able to figure something out because at this point, we want to do something for the culture. Right, we want to do something for the culture because we got enough dudes that are grown with full beards out here releasing songs and hip-hop music, even trying to appeal to a younger demographic. I feel like right now, I will sing this to the cows come home. You got a deep-ass voice. Be grown.
Gotcha.
Stop trying to appeal to these young folks, man. Be grown.
I'm trying to think who you talking about. Who's got a beard singing?
Huh?
Who's got a what?
You said a beard.
I said a beard.
Like, I'm trying beard, to talk about who got a beard.
Whatever your facial hair is on, right? You married, got a wife, girl. Like, be grown. Like, sing about shit that's according to where you at with it. Stop trying to appeal to these youngsters out here.
Man, you know something? I never thought I'd see the day. But that's something that I actually agree with them on. That has been one of my beefs about a lot of the R&B music that's coming out now. Like, even with someone like, say, for instance, Jamie Foxx, right? I think Jamie Foxx is a really talented singer. Jamie Foxx can really put out a really decent R&B album. But, like, even the last couple albums that he had put out, I wasn't necessarily drawn to him because most of it was like, okay, he's trying to appeal to this younger audience. It was like, yo, man, you got so much more to offer than that. So that's one thing, ironically, that I agree with Tyrese on, right? But you know what the thing is we've heard these sort of things before, especially when it comes to groups, man. Like, when it comes to groups, there's a lot of egos involved. There's a lot of, you know, I'm better than you. The folks are coming to see me. And I imagine before this damn interview came up that, Tyrese, Ginuwine, and Tank had a meeting, and it kind of went like this.
What you got to say, bro? That's right, Otis. Whatever you say, Otis. Now, David, it's like this. Now, either you gonna straighten up, or we letting you go. You all right with that?
I miss you. But not if you're hurting the group.
Hurting the group? I'm the best thing ever happened to this damn group.
Nobody's bigger than the group.
You all ain't stupid. I'm the one selling the records. They coming to see me.
They coming to see the Temptations.
Ain't nobody coming to see you, Otis. You wish you could work it the way I do. But you can't. Because there is only one David Bowie.
Right? I feel like Tyrese kind of did that to him, right? Like, he's just like, you. Ain't nobody coming to see you, Ginuwine. Coming to see me. Right? But you know what? One thing I kind of wonder, man. Because he talked about being grown and not appealing to these younger audiences and whatnot, and having like bass in your voice and whatnot. Like, now, one of the things that I find interesting, like, it was a time when I used to joke about some of these R&B singers sound like somebody got their nuts in a pair of vice grips because they was all singing in falsettos and shit, right? And like, I was trying to figure out like, where happened to all the dudes with the masculine voices and whatnot. Tyrese is one of those cats. He got one of the masculine voices and whatnot. But it would be interesting. it would be very interesting to say, for instance, TGT became JGT and they went out and got like Jaheim to replace his ass, right? And, and I can just imagine Tyrese out there in the office like,
"Are you crazy?
I'm sorry.
Y'all are stupid. Get off me. Y'all ain't nothing without me. I've made your asses. You can't fire me. Do you hear me? Do you hear me? Y'all can't do me like this." You ungrateful son of bitches.
Yeah, man. So they got that little beef, man. That little R&B group beef, man. It's interesting to kind of watch this shit play out, man. Now, you know what? I had this random thought earlier in the week, and I wonder if I'm the only one who's ever thought this. But the interesting thing is that I wonder if the movie Baby Boy was actually a fucking Tyrese biopic. And the reason I'm wondering this is like, yo, I kind of picture Tyrese is like, the movie ends right before Yvette gets tired of his shit, right? Like she done got fed up. He done put her through a lot already, but she done got fed up with his shit, done put this nigga out the apartment. And now he living on the streets because his mama got Melvin in the house and Melvin ain't having, like, nigga, you supposed to be living with your woman. This is my woman. And you got this Oedipus complex and everything else. So now you can't move in with us. You already got your thing going. So now Tyrese is out there homeless on the bus. And then he gets discovered singing on the bus. And that's how we get the Tyrese we get today, man. Right? He hasn't matured much at all. He feels like he can give women advice on how to be women. He feels like he should tell women how to, you know, portray themselves in order to be attractive to a man. I kind of feel like maybe Tyrese, that Baby Boy movie, might have been a biopic. It just might have been a biopic. And maybe, just maybe, might explain the kind of cat we got here out here today, man. Real talk. So, yeah, that was one of the things I was thinking about, man. One of the things I was thinking about. Now, I know I mentioned before, man, like, we lost Charlie Murphy, man. Charlie Murphy, the brother of comedian Eddie Murphy, lost his battle with leukemia yesterday. I want to say like yesterday afternoon. And it was interesting because, like, of course, I'm at work. I don't really have an opportunity to be like on my phone and on social media a lot while I'm working. But I caught a break and I just went to my phone really quick and I saw like Charlie Murphy and, like, you know, it was interesting because folks were saying, well, like, he was just on social media earlier today, like he was just on Twitter, you know, earlier in the day. So like they were really thinking it was a hoax. And that's one of the interesting things about the times that we live in now, man, where like folks feel like you can't believe the news, or you really have to vet the sources of what you get, where you get your information. Let's put it like that, because folks have like killed off a lot of people who are alive and kicking today. It's like it's like how surprised Negan was on The Walking Dead when he saw Maggie out there, guns a-blazing. You know what I'm saying? Like, he thinking she's dead, and here she is out here kicking, right? So, you know, you don't really want to like be the one to pass out bad information or false information, although sometimes people just want to be the first to tell you something. But it was sad to have heard that Charlie Murphy passed away, man. Now, over the course of the last couple of years, like, Charlie Murphy's appearance had become, you know, a bit emaciated. Like, I didn't know exactly what Charlie Murphy was suffering from. I know the last, you know, time that I saw, like, even, you know, like, images of him, like, he looked sick. He looks sick. I didn't know exactly what from, but, you know, it was the hope that he would get better. And unfortunately, that did not happen. You know, Charlie Murphy has kind of been around for a long time, man. Like, even though, like, Eddie Murphy, it was interesting. Like, Eddie Murphy used to put his brothers in a lot of his movies, like in a lot of his projects, and they may have had speaking parts and they may not have, but you've seen his brothers in a bit of everything. And in a lot of the things that Eddie Murphy has done, you saw Charlie Murphy in a lot of those projects, and his other brother, I forget his other brother's name, But one of the movies that kind of comes across that I think about is Harlem Nights. Both of his brothers appeared in that movie. And Charlie Murphy was actually able to carve out a career, a stand-up comedian career, for himself outside of and independent of his brother. So it was interesting to kind of watch that happen, because like one of the things when it comes to having like a famous sibling or a famous family member is that folks always will attach you to the one in the family who made it big. Folks will always attach you to that. And I know sometimes, you know, you kind of want to get independent of that. You don't want necessarily everybody to just associate you with just that. Right. You don't, you know, you want to be known on your own merits. You want to be known for your own accomplishments and whatnot. And one of the biggest things that that happened for Charlie Murphy's career was being able to get on the Chappelle Show and the telling of the stories that happened while he was with his brother. But the telling of the stories about Rick James. And as a matter of fact, let me pull this up. I want to share this with you guys. This is a clip, and it isn't one of the it isn't one of the famous clips that we all go to when we watched, you know, the Chappelle Show and whatnot. But it is one of the things where he was talking about Rick James and the relationship that they had with Rick James and how, Rick James would kind of like push the line. Here we go.
You know, Rick is so wild and has went so far off the meter. It's shit that I can't even tell you on TV. I mean, you know, for the sake of our friendship, you know what I'm saying? I'm not even going to bring it up. But trust me, he's went there. He has went where it's like, yo, Rick, man, what the fuck is wrong with you, man? You done took this shit too far. And his response is like this. There's no such place. Darkness. Let's go to the abyss, nigga. I'm not with it, man. I don't want to go to the abyss, man. You know what I'm saying? Rick wants to go to the abyss. In fact, he dwells in the abyss. Rick James dwells in the abyss, okay? And he wants company sometimes, you know? And for some reason, he likes to reach out for me. Whenever I'm around, when he wants to go there, he will reach out for me to try to take me to the abyss with him. And I'm not with it, man. I'm not with it. And that's when we end up, you know, tussling or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, man. So, yeah, Charlie Murphy, man, like I said, it was good to see him get out and branch out and be able to create a career all his own, independent of his brother, though. You know, I think that was the biggest thing for him is, yeah, he was Eddie Murphy's brother, but after a while, people began to know him independent of Eddie. You know, people, as a matter of fact, like a lot of the I would say a lot of people in the younger audience would know Charlie Murphy a lot more than they would know Eddie Murphy at this point, because Charlie has been more relevant to the pop culture recently, you know? So, sad to see, Charlie Murphy, you know, pass on, man. He was only 57 years old, man. He's not an old man, you know, not an old man. So it's sad to see Charlie Murphy pass on. Rest in peace to Charlie Murphy. And you know, prayers and thoughts sent out to his family, man. Like, it's gotta be tough, man. It's gotta be tough. But rest in peace to Charlie Murphy, man. Real talk. Now, another thing that kind of happened over the course of the week was this United Airlines, man. United Airlines. Oh, man, y'all. See, the thing is with United Airlines is it kind of feels like, yo, it's like, you know, when like a company is fucking up, like last week we was talking about Pepsi out here fucking up with the Kendall Jenner ad and whatever else. Right now, sometimes, man, it feels as though like these companies are trying to one up each other when it comes to fucking up. It's like, yo, Pepsi was like Pepsi out here with the bad ad with Kendall Jenner. United Airlines was just out here just like this, man.
Hold my drink, bitch.
Like, they about to go out here. Like, I'm about to amp this shit up. Y'all think y'all fucking up. We about to go out here and fuck up even more, right? So, United Airlines, they asked for volunteers. They asked for volunteers for folks to give up their seats because they overbooked a flight and they needed to make room for employees to get on this flight to get to, I believe it, I don't even know what city it was for. It was to, maybe Seattle. Despite, you know what? The destination really doesn't matter. The fact of the matter remains is United overbooked a flight. They asked paying customers to give up their seats so that they can seat employees. Now, one, as someone who used to work for an airline or two, I know one thing. They weren't ramp agents, man. Like, the ramp agents ain't getting on, and you're not about to boot any paying customers off to let a ramp agent get on a flight. Like, I remember when I used to work for the airlines, man. I used to work for American Trans Air out of Midway Airport in Chicago, man. And I think that airline is now defunct. But yeah, like when I used to work for them, man, like I used to fly standby, man. Like I would fill out a sheet of paper, man, like a, you know, travel request form or whatnot, tell them where I wanted to go. And if there were seats available on that flight, I could go. If there weren't any seats available on that flight, my ass would be sitting in that terminal until the next flight to see if I can go on that flight, right? So I know they weren't ramp agents. Had to be like maybe a flight crew, like maybe a pilot, the pilot and the first officer and maybe a couple of flight attendants and whatnot, right? So they're trying to get people to get up out of their seats, the seats they paid for, so they can accommodate their employees, right? That's rule number one. That's where they fucked up. Like, you're not gonna get too many people. Not too many people to just give up a seat that they done paid for, especially if they really got somewhere to fucking be. Nobody wants to go through that shit. And like, let's just keep it 100. Airlines since 9/11 have been given a shitty service. Since 9/11. Now, some would say since Reagan deregulated the airlines, man. But I would say not so much since 9/11. Only because, like, I remember when 9/11 happened, like, they were trying to convince people to get on airlines again. Right. They were trying to tell people, like, George W. Bush told you to go out and go shopping and fly the country. Don't let these terrorists win and all this other shit. Right. And I remember there being times where, like, because so many people were refusing to get on an airplane after 9/11, that they were like some of these airlines were saying that they were losing like shit ton of money. And like a lot of airlines did fold. But what they started doing was they started taking shit away from you because they said that they were losing money by offering this stuff, right? So you started losing the meals on the airline. Not that those meals were ever like great, but you at least get a meal offered to you on an airline. They started taking pillows away from you. You don't even get offered a pillow anymore when you're on an airline, when you're on a commercial flight. They started like not giving you a blanket when you would, like, you know, folks would get a pillow, get a blanket, and go to sleep on their flight. They don't even offer you that shit anymore. When you would get a beverage or something like that, they would offer you the can. They wouldn't just, you know, give you a cup full of fucking ice and then pour some, you know, whatever soda it was that you asked for in the cup. So, like, there was all these things. Like, you started seeing, like, they would pack more and more people in. Like, Southwest Airlines started becoming, like, the Greyhound of the air. Like, because they were just like, yo, they had really good flight, you know, they had really good prices. But, yo, they had the same sort of planes, and they would pack that motherfucker to the gills, right? So all of these airlines started giving you shittier and shittier service to the point where, like, okay, so now they've taken all of these things away from you. We've accepted that they've taken all of these things away from us as passengers and as customers. And now we have a core set of airlines that have survived. You got Delta, you got Southwest, you got United, you've got JetBlue, you've got Spirit, you've got, you know, of, you know, it's not as many airlines as we used to have, but these are your core airlines, right? And so we've accepted and allowed for them to take all of these things away from us, right? Airlines ain't really struggling that much anymore. They're not. Okay? Like, they've kind of recovered from 9/11 16 years later. They've kind of recovered. People are back to flying at their normal rates, if not more. And yet and still, all of those things that they've taken away because they said that they were losing money on those things, now they charge you for that exact same shit. So now you are paying for the drink that they used to give you complimentary. Now you are paying for the pillow that you're going to borrow on the plane. Now you're paying for the blanket, the blanket that you used to get. They're making you pay for that shit. Now when you want to check a bag, they are making you pay to check the fucking bags. You have to pay for that shit now. Now, I ain't gonna lie. When I was a baggage handler, I was like, yeah, cool, because maybe these motherfuckers will pack lighter. Right? But, yeah, man, like, all of these things, man, they're making you pay for, and you're getting shittier service, man. You're getting shittier service. So, what happens with this is, you get this man on his plane, and he's not willing to give up his seat, as I don't blame him, because, yo, he paid for the fucking seat. You now are forcing me to get off of a plane, off of something that I've already paid my money for. It would be different if this was a standby passenger who was able to board the plane, and then you figure out, oh, we really don't have this room. The standby passenger, or, you know, sometimes, like, I remember, like, I'll put it to you like this, because I'm not sure exactly how the standby rules work for regular folks. I just remember when I was an employee of an airline, I was a standby passenger and I wasn't paying. So by flying standby, it's only if those seats are available, you can get on these flights, flying standby. I can understand booting a standby passenger. I cannot understand booting someone who paid for that seat and they're there boarded on that plane. So to watch this is a bit jarring, man. Check this out.
Hey, come on.
It's one, they went way over the fucking top in removing this customer. Two, it was disgusting to see what they did afterwards, right? So after they started getting the backlash of, you know, the public finding out what it was that they did on this flight and removing this dude from this plane, that they started trying to besmirch the character of this guy, right? So now they want to go and say, well, like, this dude was this doctor whom they removed from this plane, that he was doing some unethical things as a doctor, like he was trading drugs for sexual favors or some shit like that, right? Totally unrelated to what the fuck it was that happened in this particular video or what happened to him on this flight. But the way in which they tried to besmirch his character, the way in which they tried to change the narrative because they were in the wrong, is eerily reminiscent of some of the things that we as black folks see all the time. We see this when it came to Alton Sterling. You saw this when it came to Walter Scott. You saw this when it came to Mike Brown. All of these things about whether or not they were good people. Whether or not what happened to them was justified because of these other things that happened prior to this incident, you know? And so, you know, let's just put it to you like this, man. United Airlines lost a lot of motherfucking money behind this. Like, their stock prices and their stock value plummeted by, I believe, $150 million after this video went public. Their CEO had to apologize to this man. I wouldn't be surprised if they paid this man a handsome sum for what happened to him on this video. And then on top of that, another thing happened too, man. Like, I started noticing that there were, you know, there were people who were passing around videos of, there was a black woman who had been forcibly removed from an airline in a similar fashion. And they were talking about how nobody talked about this and everything else. And I'm going to just say this for myself. I wasn't aware, right? I wasn't aware. But that does not negate what happened here, right? That does not negate what happened here by any means. What happened to both of them was fucked up, and it should not happen. And I guess what I could say as customers of airlines and whatever else, man, like, we should demand more. Like, the idea that just because they have these rules makes this okay is bullshit, right? It's bullshit. Like, we should not accept these things because they made these rules. Like I guess the biggest way to get these airlines' attention is to vote with your dollars, right? To move with your dollars. So if you have an air, but the thing is, when it comes to air travel, because of the consolidation of the industry, you don't really have a whole hell of a lot of choices, right? So, like, say for instance, United may fly places that Continental and United merged. What happens is United may not necessarily fly in the same places that Delta flies. Or Southwest may not necessarily fly in the same places that Spirit flies. And so you run into issues like that, where you end up having to spend money with these entities, even if you don't want to, if you're traveling large, you know, long distances, right? But the biggest way to kind of get the attention of a lot of these businesses and a lot of these companies, especially these airlines, is to vote with your dollars. To say, this is not something that we're going to accept. We've allowed them to make us accept paying for check bags. We've allowed them to make us pay for a pillow that we're only borrowing. We've allowed them to make us pay for a blanket to let us sleep while we're on the flight. And not having any leg room. And, you know, now there's internet on, you got to pay for the internet. And, you know, all of these things, man, we've allowed them to get away with it. They've pretty much steamrolled since 9/11. First, they were trying to be sympathetic. Now they're just taking fucking advantage. So, yeah, man. Since 9/11, man, airlines ain't been shit. I'm just going to say it like that. Since 9/11, airlines ain't been shit. And hopefully, that man and that woman who was also forcibly removed from those airlines, man, they can get some form of generous compensation for what happened to them on those airlines, man, because that's uncalled for. Really uncalled for, real talk. Now, let's move on from that. But it is also time for a couple of our segments. So let us move on to Sweep the Leg.
Sweep the Leg. You have a problem with that. No sensei. No mercy.
All right, so in Sweep the Leg tonight, we're not talking about Donald Trump tonight. We're not talking about Donald Trump, although he's done some fuck shit with the bombing and whatever else. We're going to talk about Tommy Lauren, right? Now, Tommy Lauren, of course, you guys know she's an Asshat Hall of Famer. She has earned her place there pretty much all on her own, right? So Tommy Lauren has... of course, you guys know we talked about this before. She has lost her position over at the Blaze, where she would do her final thoughts. And that's pretty much how we all came to know this woman. She would give her final thoughts on Beyonce, on the Black Panthers, on Black Lives Matter, equating them to the KKK. She was normalized on shows like The Daily Show, on Real Time with Bill Maher. And so... She had a following, man, on Facebook, on Twitter. A lot of people of the conservative-leaning diaspora, so to speak. She had a following with these people. But the interesting thing is, she didn't own the following. The Blaze owned her following. So she can't do her show. And apparently she can't strike up her own, like, YouTube, or maybe even her own Facebook, or maybe even or do what we do here on Chromecast, right? Not Chromecast, but Crowdcast. She can't strike out on her own yet because she's still under contract and they're still paying her to not even do her show, right? And the reason why she's not doing her show, of course, like we said before, like she had some views about abortion that was contrary to what her employer believes. And her employer believes that women should not have the ability to have an abortion, period. Tommy Lauren, I don't believe. Well, the thing is, Tommy Lauren's views on abortion are a bit inconsistent, right? Tommy Lauren said on The View, which is what caused her to be banned from The Blaze, that the government should not have control over a woman's body, that she should have access to an abortion and everything else. Now, because of those statements that she made on The View, The Blaze suspended her or permanently banned her from her show, which is basically firing her, but she can't do the show, but they're going to still pay her. She's under contract until September of this year. So basically, they've silenced her up until September of this year, right? So she's now suing The Blaze for unwarranted termination or unlawful termination, something like that. Unfair termination. Either way, they're saying that, you know, no, she hasn't been fired. She's still under contract. We're still paying her. She just can't do her show, right? So she went on Nightline, and these are her first public comments that she's made in an interview with Nightline since she was silenced or since she was permanently banned from her show on The Blaze. So let me pull this up so you guys can, of course, check this out for yourselves. You can watch this right along with me. Here we go. Tommy Lauren talking about her being fired from The Blaze.
If you could talk to Glenn Beck or to the folk at The Blaze, what would you say to him?
To my former employer, I would just say, let me go. Let me move on. I'm deeply hurt by what has happened. I'm disappointed in what has happened. But if this is the way that it is, let's just part ways cleanly. I just want to work and have the freedom to put my voice out there, and I want to interact with my fans and my followers. That's all I want out of this.
I'm struck by every time we go there, you get emotional.
It's my job. This is my life. This is my life. Without that, I feel lost. When your outlet is taken away from you, when your catharsis is stripped from you, and you don't understand why, and you're so disappointed, and you're so blindsided by it, it hurts.
Okay. Now, yeah. You know what? I know I've been very critical of Tommy Lauren. I have been somewhat insensitive to Tommy Lauren and her plight. Can we all shed a tear for Tommy Lauren?
No!
Yeah, man. Listen, this whole thing of I feel lost, I've had something stripped from me and I'm blindsided, I don't understand why, I just don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. I don't understand. These white tears, man, are fucking delicious, man. Well, let me not put it like that. Her white tears are fucking delicious. Like I can't for the life of me garner any motherfucking sympathy for this woman whatsoever, especially considering some of the hateful things that her outlet allows for her to say. And especially for the things that she believes, like, I don't have any sympathy for that. And for her to be taken away, like, for her to have her platform taken away from her, like, to me, I'm like, yeah, cool, fuck her, I don't care. And the irony of the thing is, like, yo, she didn't even fucking own her own platform. She didn't even own it. It was somebody else's. They allowed for her to have a platform. Now, yeah, she may have cultivated a certain audience who, you know, I wouldn't even say cultivated a certain audience. Here's what I will say. Glenn Beck, who as despicable as he is, As despicable as Glenn Beck is, Glenn Beck already had a name, he had a brand, and that was The Blaze. And a lot of people who followed Glenn Beck from Fox News to The Blaze went there because that was his shit. And she was allowed to, or they gave her a contract to come onto his network or his entity, his media entity, and they allow her for her to be on there. Now, she garnered fans from an already sizable audience, and then she brought other fans along the way because they also believed in some of the crass, dumb, ignorant bullshit that she was spewing, right? But at the end of the day, the platform was not hers. It was somebody else's. She didn't own it, which is probably her first motherfucking mistake. But it's also interesting because she had more to say about, you know, her not being a feminist and all this other thing. Let me just go ahead and play it so you guys can hear for yourself.
Sounds like you've shed a tear or two over this.
Don't tell anyone. I'm supposed to be tough. No, I mean, these kind of things, people see me online and they see my hot takes. They see my final thoughts and they see someone that is very different. But I'm a human being at the end of the day, and something has been stripped from me, and that's my ability to work. That's my ability to have a voice. That's my ability to communicate with those fans and those followers that I've organically built for myself. And that's been taken from me, wrongfully. So I'm upset by it, and I'm hurt by it, and I feel betrayed by it. But at the end of the day, I'm gonna come out of this stronger, because I'm not the kind of girl that sits in the corner and cries about things. And that's another message I really want to get across. I don't consider myself a feminist, but boy, I will not lay down and play dead, ever.
All right, now, yeah, it's a couple things with this, man. One, like, the irony of this is very thick. You know, the irony of this is, like, you know, Tommy Lauren, who went on that show and gave her final thoughts, the things that kind of helped her go viral when talking about Beyonce. Let's be honest, like, most people heard about her because she decided to say some stupid shit about Beyonce. A lot of people heard of her because of some of the stupid shit she had to say about Colin Kaepernick. But the interesting thing here is, like, you know, Tommy Lauren and a lot of the people who follow Tommy Lauren would call those who would bitch about the things that she's bitching about now a snowflake, right? When she doesn't consider herself a feminist, but some of the same ideas that are keeping her from being out here, giving her voice to things, being able to speak to the things that she thinks is important, being able to have her own autonomy, being able to control her own destiny. These are things that a lot of women have been asking for a long time. And yet when they were talking about these things, Tommy Lauren made it a point to kind of make fun of these women on her show. Tommy Lauren called a lot of these women snowflakes. Tommy Lauren called a lot of Black Lives Matter no better than the KKK. And if they said anything about, you know, what's going on in the public lexicon about just how things are in America that they didn't agree with, Tommy Lauren called them snowflakes. So it's real interesting to see Tommy Lauren now emotional and hurt and kind of lost, because something has been taken away from her. It's interesting to see that, man. It's interesting to see that the system that she upheld for quite a while, that has kind of given her her name, like upholding this institutionalized bullshit, the system that has elevated her, has now kind of taken her down a peg. It's interesting to see her buck against that now, considering something has now been taken away from her. Now, truth be told, I don't plan on seeing her now espousing the virtues of Black Lives Matter. I don't see her espousing the virtues of, say, for instance, Malcolm X or the Black Lives Matter. I mean, the Black Lives Matter or Black Panthers or whatever. She doesn't come across as somebody who is open to learning about the truth of what that was and what that movement was about. If it if it contradicts her political argument, right? She doesn't seem to be that open to that kind of education. But it is interesting to kind of watch her now try to put on this cape of white victimhood. Like now all of a sudden, Tommy Lauren, the firebrand conservative blonde bombshell, is now a fucking victim of the system in which she, the system that she championed. So yeah, man, we have no sympathy for Tommy Lauren here over at the Span Report. Good motherfucking riddance. And that has been Sweep the Leg tonight here on the Span Report. God damn it, where did it go? There we go.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that? No, sensei. No mercy.
All right. Now, another thing that I wanted to talk about was Dez Bryant. Now, Dez Bryant is a wide receiver for the Dallas Cowboys. He's been in the news last couple of days, excuse me, because of some of the things that he said about racism in America, right? Now, the interesting thing about this here is, one, the only, like, I'm starting to notice, man, like, when athletes say something contradictory to, especially with black athletes, when they say something contradictory to the attitude of the vast majority of African Americans in the country, is that a lot of white folks want to give these people a megaphone. They want to give these people a platform, right? And most of that is because it absolves white folks of their role in the institutionalized racism that black folks or LGBT folks or what have you. It absolves them of their role in the problems that these people are facing, the marginalized groups of the country. It absolves them of that. So Dez Bryant took to, let's see, what was it, Instagram, and he has some very interesting things to say. As a matter of fact, let me see if I can pull this up. Thought I had this up already. Yeah, I thought I had this up. Hold on just a second, people. Give me a second here. Okay, here it is. This is coming out of Maxim. Wait, this isn't it. This is actually about Shannon Sharpe's response to him. Okay, let me see if I can pull this up. Because I want to pull up his exact quote. I don't want to misquote him here. So as a matter of fact, let me just kind of see if, damn it, where is it? Okay. I found it. Now, the interesting thing is Breitbart.com is the one who's reporting this, who has this on their website. Now, and as I said last, what was that, Sunday? When I said Sunday, with Sage Steele being the asshead of the week, when Breitbart.com is out here trying to plead your case, that's when you know you fucking up. That is your stamp of I'm fucking up approval from white folks, right? So, Bryant went on Instagram. He says, first and foremost, I would like to say I do a great job of minding my own business, but it's pressing on my heart to share my thoughts about white Americans and black Americans, racism. I saw a person quote Charles Barkley when he said, we as black people, we're never going to be successful, not because of you white people, but because of other black people. I hate to admit it, but I understand that quote. Right? Now, here's the thing with, like, Charles Barkley. Charles Barkley isn't a motherfucking social scientist. Charles Barkley isn't a political commentator. Charles Barkley isn't... Charles Barkley, if we're talking basketball, I would love to hear from Charles Barkley. I would love to hear how his mind works with the game. When it comes to racial issues, Charles Barkley has shown himself to be completely fucking clueless. So for Dez Bryant to use Charles Barkley, Charles motherfucking Barkley as an example as to what his attitude around race relations are in America, that's troublesome in and of itself to use Charles Barkley as that example. But it goes on. It says, I've been racially profiled on numerous occasions, but not once has it influenced an ill feeling inside me about anyone else outside that issue. Real slavery is different from what's going on in our world now. We all, every ethnicity, have the opportunity to lead by example. Instead of making videos about the history of racism that get applause or people with influence merely doing things to post for social media, we should focus on individual accountability to be better as a whole. Now, of course, you guys have listened to me. For those of you who have listened to me here on the Spare Report podcast, this reeks of respectability politics like a motherfucker. And we y'all know how I feel about the respectability politics out here, man. Y'all know how I feel about it because... here's the thing. It absolves the very same white people and the institutions that these white people have founded and set up. It absolves them of any responsibility for their role in the plight of Black Americans in the country. Totally absolves them. Totally just gives them a, you know what? Wipe your hands clean. It has nothing to do with you. Now, here's the thing. It's not to say that people, all people, not just Black people, but people, period, need to be making better decisions. I don't want this shit to get twisted. No one is saying to go out here and make bad motherfucking decisions and to not reap the consequences behind those bad decisions. But when it comes to race relations in America, to have that conversation and to totally exclude the institutionalized racism, the socialized racism, the everyday microaggressive actions of white folks against minorities, against people of color, against just people, period, in marginalized positions, to act as if those things are fucking oblivious or that they don't matter is bullshit. And it totally absolves the offending party of what they did. And the danger of doing that, and the danger of saying stupid shit like that, is that you get this, Breitbart.com quoting you and saying that, yeah, Black people are their own fucking worst enemy. We ain't the ones doing it to them, despite everything we really out here fucking doing to them. Right? And the thing about it is, I watched earlier today, I was watching television earlier today, and I was watching, what was it, Stephen A. Smith was on First Take, and it was Stephen A. Smith, Max Kellerman, and his other guy name. I think his name was Will Payne or some shit like that. And it was interesting to watch Will Payne try to lecture to Stephen A. Smith, who has his own fucking issues himself. But it was interesting to kind of watch Will Payne try to explain what racism is and try to explain what is and isn't racism and what should be discussed in amongst mixed company, because that was something Max Kellerman was talking about, whether or not these things should be aired out for the public, for white people and everyone else to kind of take, you know, to kind of chime in on, right? And it reminded me of one of the biggest things that I hate about white folks when it comes to racism, and it's the thing of them believing that they get to define the terms of what racism is and what it means to the people who are being affected by said racism, right? So if I'm in a situation where I notice something racist happening, you have a plausible explanation as to why this isn't racism. And now it makes me look like I'm fucking crazy because you're trying to tell me now that I didn't see what I saw. I didn't experience what the fuck I experienced, and what I thought I saw wasn't that. Right? So white folks feel as if they get to dictate to you what racism is. Not that you as a sufferer of the racism, like you can't fuck, like, that's the thing. Like Black folks aren't fucking experts on what racism is. As if we don't know what it is. We have to navigate this world, especially black folks in America. We have to navigate this world knowing how to maneuver around white people. We know white people better than white people know white people, because we have to, as a means of fucking survival, right? We kind of got to know how white folks is feeling about shit. We can't run away from that. We are inundated with how white folks are feeling about shit and their psychology around that. Black people are experts in this shit because we have to be for our own survival, right? Now, white folks, y'all can go days without seeing a black person in your town, in your neighborhood. You can go days without interacting with black people. Because there's certain enclaves in parts of America where, like, yo, there just really aren't that many people of color. There really aren't that many black people around there. So you don't really get to dictate to black people what racism is to them. Because chances are what ends up happening is when white folks try to dictate and define what racism is to them, it absolves them of that. Nobody's racist anymore. All this racism happening out here in the world, nobody's fucking racist. You point out to something that's racist, that's happening, that's racist, and you looking at it like, yo, this is fucked up. Take, for instance, the heroin epidemic that's crisscrossing the country right now. White folks are bearing the brunt of that epidemic, right? And the ways in which we respond to that are totally different from the crack epidemic of the 80s and the 90s. And we locked folks up and we gave, you know, all of these people all this time for possession and never really giving them any treatment. We locked their asses up. Right? Now, a white person would like, some of these white folks would say, "Well, that's not racist. We've become more evolved in our thinking, and we know that like locking them up isn't necessarily the right thing to do." But when the epidemic was of black people suffering from this particular scourge on the earth, we locked them up. We have so much more compassion for white people dealing with this new drug epidemic. Now, black folks see the double standard and they know what it looks like to them. You don't get to dictate to them what racism is. You don't. And not only that, when people like Dez Bryant, Charles Barkley, Bill Cosby, Ben Carson, Charles Payne of Fox News, his bitch ass. When people like this start talking about personal responsibility, personal accountability, black folks needing to look at ourselves. We need to look at ourselves. If we don't respect us, how can we expect anybody else to respect us? The thing is, when it comes to respectability politics, these motherfuckers would have you believe that if only you acted a certain way, and if only you presented a certain way, and if only you did things the way that these white folks think that we should be doing things, and everything will be fine. But the problem is that we've had black folks exhibiting these very same characteristics and still found themselves on the wrong end of a racist system. Think about Henry Louis Gates when President Obama was first elected. Around the time President Obama was first elected, Henry Louis Gates is going into his home. He's locked out of his own home, and the police arrest him for breaking into his own home. Here's a man who's a professor, who's been on television and done numerous documentaries about like the history of Africans and African Americans in this country. Here he is, he's doing everything that everybody says you're supposed to do, and yet he's being treated like a common fucking criminal. Look at Dr. King. Dr. King, who is now celebrated as one of the greatest Americans of all time, as the conscience of America, as the person who dreamt that America could be better than what it was. How did he meet his fate, and who helped him meet it? Malcolm X, after he got out of prison, was the epitome of respectability. He dressed nice. He spoke eloquently. He spoke forcefully. How did he meet his fate? They deemed him an enemy of the state. Infiltrated the Nation of Islam and had them do it. Take out Malcolm X. There are countless examples of you being a respectable or black people being respectable and not necessarily escaping the racism that America had for him. So for someone like a Dez Bryant to get on fucking Instagram and say these things, for someone like Charles Barkley, for someone like Ben Carson, for someone like Charles Payne, for someone like Bill Cosby, any of you silly motherfuckers who out here talking this respectability politics bullshit, trust and believe that this shit, you don't escape it either. You don't escape the reach of this system either. Now, that's not to say that, yo, we should embrace a victimhood mentality, right? Because that's what a lot of these dumb motherfuckers will say to you. Like, when anytime you bring voice to the things that are happening and why they're happening to you, and they think that, like, yo, if only we did this, and if only we did that, that you are embracing a victimhood mentality. Like, no, it's calling this shit for what it fucking is. It's not trying to make it different because I don't, it's not trying to separate myself from the plight of the community that I'm a part of. That's not what this is. And too many motherfuckers with this respectability politics bullshit, too many of y'all try to separate yourselves from other black folks thinking that you're going to escape this system that is designed for you to fuck up. No matter what it is you do, it is designed to catch you fucking up. Sometimes you ain't even got to be fucking up. It is designed to fuck you up. And if you become too much of a, they'll catch you in some bullshit. And then you'll be running back. Say, for instance, if Dez Bryant gets in some trouble, and I'm not trying to say that he's a troublesome dude, like, but say, for instance, if he does become, like, get into a problem. Dez Bryant, much like O.J. Simpson, would be looking to this very same black community that he's admonishing, talking about, we got to be lead by example. And it's like one of those things where, like, it looks as if, like, it's like there's a contingent of black folks who think that black people have to take on the burden of solving racism. There's a contingent of white folks who believe that black people are under the burden of solving racism. And the reason that the white folks think that they're it's up to the black people to absolve racism for them is to, yo, they don't want to feel guilty anymore. They want to be able to continue to operate in the ways in which they operate and not feel guilty about the ways in which they operate, despite how they operate, maybe fucking with some people. And then there are black folks who feel as though, like, yo, again, when it comes to respectability, if only we did this and if only we did that, then these white folks would respect us. And that's not how it works. It is not up to black people to solve racism for anybody. Like, black folks didn't create racism. Black folks didn't institutionalize racism. It is not for us to solve this problem. What we can do is continue to put it in the face of these people when they fucking up, and force change in the ways in which they're fucking up. Now, it's not the easiest motherfucking thing in the world to do. If it were easy, it would be done already. We wouldn't have these issues anymore. But fucked up attitudes permeate. Ignorance permeates. It's so fucking easy to be ignorant. It's so easy to do that. It requires no effort to be ignorant. That's why so many people are. It's like folks make fun of the people who would say that they're woke, so to speak, right? Call them shea butter Twitter and all these other different names and whatnot. Folks make fun of those people. But you know, the interesting thing is, man, and this is something that I've been thinking about, is that once you are made aware of the bullshit that is going on around you, it is very difficult not to see it anymore. Very hard, man. Like, you notice the shit all around you after a while. Like, before, you might not necessarily have been aware of it. You weren't looking for it. And someone brought it to your attention. And then once someone brings it to your attention, you're like, oh, okay. And then you see it again. And then you see it again. And then you start recognizing how fucking prevalent it is. All this bullshit going on around you when it comes to race relations, when it comes to being homophobic, when it comes to Islamophobia, when it comes to all of the phobias, when it comes to all of the ist, when it comes to all of these things, you start noticing it and you see it and you notice it when it's happening. Once someone brings it to your attention, it's hard not to see it anymore. And so, I don't know, man. Like, it becomes irritating when, like, this is something that I've talked about before on the show, man. Like, I talked about this with Charles Barkley. I've talked about this when it came to the show Empire. I talked about this when it came to, what's the dude name for The Birth of a Nation? Parker. Nate Parker. The respectability that people want to elevate, it totally absolves these white folks of what they've done and what they continue to do and the systems that are in place to negate your successes and to impede your progress. And so, yeah, man, like Dez Bryant, I'm not going to tell this dude to like stick to football because I'm sure that, like, first of all, that's demeaning. And second of all, like, yo, he has room to grow. He's a young dude. He's 28 years old. Right? I remember when I was 28 years old, I was out here saying some foul shit. Right? Like, I remember when I first started the Span Report or the Span TV channel on YouTube. You can go on YouTube right now and catch me saying some stupid shit. Now, at the time, I thought it was cool, man. I thought what I was saying was legitimate. I thought what I was saying was righteous. I thought what I was saying was logical. And at 28, I thought what I was saying was the truth. Here I am, damn near 37. And a lot of the things that I was saying, that you couldn't catch me agreeing with that now. Right? So he's got room to grow. He's got room to learn and to elevate his level of thinking, to be mindful of the way in which not only just how he's thinking about the shit, but also be mindful of how what he says affects other people. Right? Now, I talked about like this particular article here and his statements being archived on Breitbart.com. I remember I did a video. I want to say this happened a while ago. I believe it was when this young lady was she was punched in the face by Seattle police. This is a while ago. Young lady was punched in the face by the Seattle police at some, like, the police were trying to arrest her cousin or her sister or whatever. And at the time, I was watching that video, and at the time, I felt like the police was within his rights, as, you know, he was trying to execute an arrest and this woman was she was interfering with that and he was trying to get control of the situation and he punched her in her forehead. And at the time I felt like I felt like it was a legitimate move. I felt like it was a warranted force of action at the time. I also remember doing a video on YouTube where I talked about there was this young dude. He had put his son out to do a video with his son doing a lot of cursing and whatnot. Guy with had, like, you know, a grill in his mouth, you know, teeth and, you know, gold teeth and all these other things, man. And I remember doing a video about this kid, and it was like the video was laced, like totally laced in respectability, the respectability politics, man. And those videos are still up. They're still on YouTube. And like I told you guys before, man, I'm not taking those videos down because that was how I felt at the time. And like, it's kind of like a time capsule. You guys get to see kind of like my growth over the course of the last shit, damn near 10 years now. Right? But the reason I talk about that and the reason that I say that is because, again, Dez Bryant, at 28 years old, has room to grow. But what he said at this particular point in time was bullshit. It was bullshit. It was laced in bullshit. It was laced in lack of knowledge of history. It was laced in lack of knowledge about social structure. It was laced in lack of knowledge about the ways in which this system has been set up to impede his progress. Now, trust and believe, Dez Bryant is a millionaire. He's probably he isn't necessarily bound by the same restraints that those who are behind him have upon them. But he still has room to learn. He still has room to grow. And I hope he does that. I hope he does that. Real talk. But yeah, man, it is time for me to get out of here. But before I go, I got to let you guys know how to get in touch with me here at the Span Report Podcast and let your voice be heard, man. Go ahead, hit me up at the hotline, area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Man, leave me those voicemail messages. I'll play them on the show and respond in kind. You can also hit me up at feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Leave me those emails. I read those emails here live on the show and respond as well. Also, chop it up with me on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both platforms, Mr_Span. So go ahead and follow me there. We can chop it up throughout the week. iTunes and on Stitcher reviews, man. Leave those 5-star reviews. Those get read on the show here. And for all of your Span Report needs, go to www.thespanreport.com. Go there, watch the show, vote in the polls, watch the videos that I use while I'm doing the show. All of that, man. Do all of that. It's all available at thespanreport.com, man. But it is time for me to go. And I will talk to you guys again Easter Sunday, man. So until next time, fam. Peace.